Senator Stump, Senate File 2095, the Omnibus E-12 bill.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. The Omnibus Education E-12 Education Finance Bill have before you, and what I'd like to do, Mr. Chairman and members, is give you just a little bit of a synopsis, a summary, an overview of the proposal, and then I'd ask Mr. Nauman to, I have an amendment that I'd like to address, and then go through the appropriations spreadsheet and the levy tracking spreadsheet, and then touch on a couple provisions that are kind of major to the overall bill before you, relating to some changes and reforms that we have in the legislation. The target for the E-12 Education Finance Committee was $498 million. And that is, as I mentioned yesterday in the Finance Committee, I had submitted a must-do list to Senator, the Finance Chair. He requested a must-do list and also a list of, it would be nice if we had the money list. And our must-do list was about $950 million. So the $498 was definitely a scaled-back version of the must-do list. We also received a very, as part of this overall education package, $75 million, and it is with understanding with the amendment that we'll offer that will go up by $3 million and address or help put together a package of funding our schools as well as reducing property taxes in the state of Minnesota. The approach that the division took was to look at an area that was a responsibility of the state that we haven't fully accepted in the past. If you remember in 2003, when there was a significant reduction in spending to try to balance the budget and everything, education, we borrowed from education to the tune of over $1 billion. In 2004, many of us wanted to try to address that borrowing from our schools, and we adopted a language that said that when the cash flow account was full and when the reserve account was full at that time, then any surplus dollars over and above that would go back to purchase back that borrowing that we did from our schools out there. The one problem that existed was we should have included special education at that time, but we did not. In 2003, we actually made the situation worse. We had an inflation factor built in.
Great, thank you.
To try to address the growing costs of special education. We took that inflation factor out. So what that did is it drove the special education costs even more disproportionately out of whack. And consequently, our school districts right now are facing some disastrous financial conditions out there, because we have not been paying our share of special education costs. To give you an example, there's different formulas that we fund our special education. The largest one is in statute is that we spend, or should spend, pay our school district 68% of the personnel costs for special education. Currently, we're well below that, I think somewhere in the 40%. And so the difference is made up by school districts. And the way they generally make it up is they take it out of their general fund, which is really meant for programs offered in the school district, and have to pay their special ed costs. Because if you remember, special ed is driven by a federal mandate, and it's backed up by the courts, that those costs have to be paid. So the choice of doing that was very similar to the amount that we had. Didn't quite cover it. Actually, in our actual tracking sheets, you'll see that we actually spend more than the $498 million to take care of that cost. The second big issue that I think many of us wanted to try to address this year was to try to reduce property taxes across the state. And the way we went after that in the education arena was to look at three levies that we currently have: the operating capital levy, the transition levy, and the equity levy. And each of these levies, they're not uniform. In other words, they're levied at different equalization factors. And so our attempt was to try to reform that and put all three of those levies together, create a new levy, which is called a consolidated levy, and then reduce that consolidated levy by the amount that we received from the tax committee in the Education Improvement Fund. And then we also put some additional money with some program reductions that we made, so that in the bill you'll see that we reduce property taxes statewide by close to $110 million. That meant that we have a package here, I think, that addresses two major concerns: stabilizing education funding for our schools and reducing the property tax burden on our taxpayers. We'll explain a little of that in more detail as we go through. There are a couple of other provisions that we can touch on, Mr. Chairman, and I think we probably will. I'll just touch on those as we go through the bill. To get us to where we would like to be, Mr. Chairman, I would like to see if someone would offer the A5 amendment. Then we would, our runs and everything that we can hand out are in sync with that.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Larson moves the A5.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Stump to the A5?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, the A5 amendment has several provisions in it. The first one I mentioned is that the increase, or the dollars that you have so generously given us, the Education Improvement Fund, is increased from $75 to $78 million. There is a provision here that we needed to adjust the declining pupil unit aid for Red Lake. That is in subdivision or section 41. The actual appropriation is in subdivision 14. There was a situation that arose from the finance committee to here in career and technical aid or career and technical program. We'll pay lines 1.17, 1.18 addresses that. We change the factors so that the career and technical aid and levy actually gets out there to where we want it. Lines 1.19 is a provision that was offered, an amendment that was offered in the appropriations, or the Finance Committee by Senator Dill, and he did not really have the language to accomplish what he wanted to accomplish, and so the agreement was is that we would work on that language and offer it in the Tax Committee. It really is a $25,000 grant to the Lieber Sober School Academy in Litchfield with a matching grant from Meeker County. And then there's lines 1.26 is technical. There's several technical lines here relating to the review and comment, and lines 1.30 and 1.31 relates to, and then the other, I guess all the way up to 1.33 relates to provision for the Eden Valley Watkins School District. They were in the proposal. They had a mercury spill in their school and consequently had some extensive cleanup costs. They are on the fringe of going into statutory operating debt, and so we loaned them the money and had them pay it back over 4 years. What they wanted to do was to pay it back over 5 years, and so that change is on those lines. And then, Mr. Chairman, the language on the bottom of the amendment relates to the deletion of the early childhood program that will, I believe, go into another bill.
And this page two.
That's all. Mr. Chairman, perhaps I can help a little bit there. Those deletions were added to the amendment later on. The notes that Senator Stumpf were working on have them handwritten, so he doesn't have the line numbers that you have. On page two, those are also deletions of accounts that reflect the pre-kindergarten allowance section that's in this bill that I think we're leaving here in the Tax Committee.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lumber.
I couldn't hear you, Mr. Nauman, on your explanation of the deletions on page two. Could you tell me what sections 12, 13, 14 through 17 and the subdivision 8 are all about?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lumber, of course. In the bill as it stands before you right now, there is a section that relates to the pre-kindergarten allowances. This is a new finance system to pay for early childhood education, and it is my understanding that these sections are being deleted out of this bill because they will be carried in another bill coming out of the Tax Committee.
And, Mr. Chair, that's also on page one, on line 35.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Lumber, yes, I think I would highlight for you 1.35 and then onto the second page, 2.1, 2.2. Right. Accomplish that, those changes.
And then, Mr. Chair and Mr. Nauman, lines 3 and 4 on page 2, are they also ECFE or are they something else?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Lumber, I think those are just renumbering sections and correcting internal references.
Okay. And one other line that no one talked about was line 27 on page 1 that's striking three lines,
yes.
18 through 21 on page 55.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lumber, good catch. As the bill came out of the Finance Committee, as the K-12 bill works its way through the process, one of the benefits of making a couple of stops is that we have the opportunity to correct some technical things. The Department of Education called me and said that as part of the moving special education payments from a two-year lagging payment to a current year payment, which is part of the contents of the bill, They found a few pieces of language that should have been deleted or stricken, and we had neglected to do that, so that's a technical correction to that payment system.
All right. Thank you.
On the A5 amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails. A5 is adopted.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And now,
take him with
if I can ask Mr. Nauman to go through the appropriations spreadsheet and then the levy tracking sheet.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm working off of a document titled E12 FY 2008-2009 Budget Appropriation Tracking. It's a legal-sized document that across the columns says Senate 06, 07, Senate 08, 09, et cetera. Begins with the general education program on the line items. Lower left-hand corner, 3:53 p.m. yesterday. Like this.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Nauman, can you catch me up? Which one are we on?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Senjum, it is titled Appropriation Tracking in the second line of the upper left-hand corner. It is a legal-sized document, landscape orientation. I know the K-12 bill tends to throw a lot of paper at you. Sorry about that.
Okay. I'll get that. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members, to orient you across the columns, Senate 06-07 numbers, it's somewhat unusual for us to bring to you or to the Senate appropriations in the current fiscal year. We are currently in fiscal year 2007, but the special education proposal that I spoke to about with Senator Limmer does actually contain some appropriations in the 07 fiscal year, so we are carrying the existing biennium. And then moving across, and I'll speak to that when we get to that. Senate fiscal 08-09, these are the traditional fiscal years that we look at and that we are setting the budget for. And then we are also tracking the tails. Primarily, I'll work down the column about in the middle of the page that's titled Difference Senate minus February fiscal 08-09. We had some questions in the Finance Committee yesterday about why some of the line items are italicized, and those indicate policy changes. Some of them are also underlined. Those indicate programs that are shifted on the K-12 90-10 payment schedule. And I know this committee is the Tax Committee, so I will try to be somewhat brief on the appropriations unless you'd like to belabor some of the points. I'd be happy to go through them. On line 8 is a limitation on the QComp program, so-called QComp program. What we have done is held all districts that are participating in the program currently and charter schools harmless, but we have rolled out a growth assumption. There was a fairly healthy growth assumption for future participation, and there tended to be not quite as much participation in the last couple of years, and so it was felt that that could be growth that was recaptured and spent elsewhere, money that wasn't effectively being used in the judgment of the committee. Then also the QComp program is rolled out of general education, and that's added back later. So that's line 9 where we take $39 million of savings. But that's for the districts and the charters, and it actually shows up later as an addition. There's two changes to general education, some simplification and streamlining of the equity program that was included in the department's the governor's recommendation, then a update for a new regression analysis on the transportation sparsity program. There's some exemptions on the job Z calculations that streamline the education calculations, carrying some very minor costs and some minor levy savings when we get to that piece. On line 19, the tax-based replacement aid, which was a provision several years ago authored by Senator Langseth, that is being rolled into the general education program. We're not changing the substance of the program, but just merely appropriating it through the general education accounts. On line 20 is, Mr. Chairman, is the line you'll probably have of most interest on this spreadsheet here. That's the consolidated levy buy down. You after the amendment, have provided $78 million into the education improvement account, which the K-12 bill spent and matched with an additional 12. That gets you to the 90 that you show here. Because of the 90-10 payment schedule, that actually shows up as about $100 million of buy-down in general education. The bill also contains a freeze of the number of charter schools statewide at 150. That carries a few thousand dollars of savings in fiscal 09 in general education. Senator Stumpf mentioned the Eden Valley Watkins repayment. There is also a the loan. We give them the $126,000 to clean up the mercury. They then are asked to levy an amount. Thank you. Over 5 years to pay that back, and then a subtraction off of general education is taken. It's a way of improving the cash flow of the district, allowing them to deal with the issue, and then to hold the state harmless. So that's general education, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to skip over the next several lines and move down quickly to line 63, which is the alternative, the Q comp, where the Q comp is added back. We mentioned that before. There's $39.1 million being added back. Those are the districts and charter schools that currently exist. And again, I'm skipping over several of the appropriations. I, of course, will speak to them if you have an interest. Perhaps the biggest money in the bill is in the special education program, and I'd like to spend a couple of moments with that. Mr. Chairman and members, on line 93, and now I'm looking under the fiscal year 2007 column, is the first change that we make to special education. Senator Stumpf spoke to the so-called cap gap. This is the amount that the statutory formula has grown relative to where the cap is on the appropriations that we established in the 2003 legislature. And so what this proposal does is bring special education regular, special education excess cost, and special education transition disabled. It fully funds the statutory formula and eliminates that cap gap. And that's what's happening on lines 94, 101, and flipping over to the second page, 105. So you see that in fiscal year 2007, we are adjusting appropriations upward by about $125.9 million. Then, Mr. Chairman and members, now skipping to fiscal year 2008 and 2009 biennium, but concentrating on those same lines, as we move forward, an inflation factor of 4.6%, special education is growing at about 4.5%, 4.6%. percent on regular special ed had some symmetry because it's very close to that growth factor and does it a little bit better, but also brings us back to the program growth factor that we had in 2003 prior to its elimination. So as you can see on line 94, $164 million, $196 million, $230, $266, that shown there is the growth of that 4.6% growth factor. But in addition, there are a couple of roll-ins. Transition disabled, under the governor's recommendation, is being rolled into special education regular. And the Part C program, which was funded, I believe, for the first time in last year out of Senator Hottinger's committee, was felt that that was more appropriate to be included in regular special education. So that's being rolled in together. And it is a nice cleanup. But as a result, you have several line items to sort of track all the changes. Lines 94 through 97 get you to the total appropriation for regular special ed. There's several line items. And to simplify that, to tie it out to the bill, we have created line 110. So under fiscal year 2008, line 110 actually displays the appropriation for regular special ed at $703 million. All those items added up together get you to that number. And those all carry forward. There's also increases to excess cost, same notion. We carry a summary line down below. Transition disabled, which is part of that roll-in, gets zeroed out beginning in fiscal year 2008. and 8. So, Mr. Chairman, I know I breezed through that fairly quickly. If there are questions about what we're doing in special ed, I'll pause for a moment.
So, Mr. Nauman, special ed is now, the inflation is back in and it's fully funded. Is that what we've done here?
Mr. Chairman, our statutory formula never contemplates the complete elimination of what's been commonly referred to as the cross-subsidy. But what we are doing is fully funding the statutory formula. In 2003, we added a cap, and that cap, with the growth in the special ed costs, has grown over time. So beginning in 2007, we fully fund that cap, and then we reestablish the growth factor to keep on pace with the growth in special education. And I did...
Senator Sundrum.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Nauman, you mentioned 4.6% growth or inflation against, normally I think we think about 2% and so on. So is that growth a function of just more kids going into special education?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Sundrum, I'm not the best expert on why that growth is happening, but I can tell you that more kids are coming into the system, so there's cost associated with that, and additional types of special ed kids are being brought into the system with different kinds of treatments required to move forward, and that's generating cost as well.
Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Sundrum, in the we had quite a good discussion about how we might, in the long term, lower those costs. And so there's a number of ways to do that. Different members had different proposals, from ranging from earlier screening to try to identify those children with disabilities as quickly as possible, get them some help so that they can get back on track and maybe never really get into the system of special ed, and several new strategies in terms of how you work with those students. And I think the feeling is that is the most demonstrated way to try to lower the long-term costs of special ed. I think once you establish a proven kind of a system, and I think that was, to a large extent, the discussion about the investments into early childhood, is that that will help not only those, well, help all children, but it would especially help, I think, those children that can get help early and need help early. Everything from hearing to a host of different kinds of shortcomings that children come to school with. So that's also in here in a modest way, but I think it'll be I think it'll definitely help us in the long term.
Mr. Chairman and member, continuing on, the next grouping of accounts is the facilities and technology. Technology under the TAG grants is increased by $8.2 million, almost $8.3 million. Nutrition online 135 has been the reimbursement for lunch has been increased by 1.5 cents. That generates a $3 million increase to the nutrition accounts. Libraries have both the basic support, the multi-county library, and the regional library telecommunications aid received some increases under this bill, and they have not had some for several years. And then, Mr. Chairman, skipping to the next page, and we're now into the early childhood accounts. ECFE on line 159 returns to the formula that was in place prior to the 2003 session that carries $5.5 million of cost. And the health and developmental screening aid also increases by $1.3 million, almost $1.4. Then, Mr. Chairman, we're down into the Department of Education. I believe all funding bills this year will carry a 3.25% increase to employee salaries and benefits for the Department of Education. That's on lines 198, 199, and 200 for the department, as well as the Board of Teaching and the Board of School Administrators. And then when you have on line 215 as well as on line 223, those same increases for both the Purpich and Faribault Academies. And then, Mr. Chair and members, on line 243 is the education improvement account. That is technically spending that will be carried by the tax bill that is being spent in the education bill, so we are netting it off so we remain at our 498 target. And Mr. Chairman, that's the appropriations tracking. I know we are in the tax committee, so I tried not to belabor that point too much, but I think more interest on your part will be the next document. Again, it's oriented the same way. This is the property tax tracking. Should be somewhat familiar to the members of this committee. We try to keep it consistent year to year, at least in the presentation. And Mr. Chairman, I think everyone... a quick orientation. Taxes payable 2007 is the first year of numbers that we have. We are not making any changes in that year. It generally takes 2 years before any changes can occur. So the next grouping of numbers, taxes payable 2008, fiscal 09, then the governor's recommendations and a change, and then finally the Senate position with a change relative to current law. And those are the numbers that I'm going to be working off of primarily, and here we'll discuss the consolidated levy. I'll mention before I get to that for both fiscal year 10, taxes payable 09, and fiscal year 11, taxes payable 2010, are also displayed. They primarily just parallel the conversation from taxes payable 2008. So on lines 7, 8, and 9, members will note that under the Senate proposal, those levies for equity transition and operating capital have been zeroed out. Together, if you just added those numbers up, you end up with about $219 million of levy that exists in the system right now under current law, and the Senate has zeroed out. Skipping down to the consolidated levy on line 16, members will note that the add back on the consolidated levy is $119 million. So the difference between those that we subtracted and the amount that we added back is that $100 million, that 78 of which comes from this committee, and roughly 12 was put in by the Education Finance Committee. Then some additional savings accrues to the bill as a result of the QComp assumption limitation. The QComp program is an aid and levy program, and there is some levy built into the growth assumptions under the February forecast associated with that growth. And there's $7 million of savings that accrues to the bill for on line 14 associated with that. On line 15 is also levy savings in the general education program of $11.8 million. Associated with rolling QComp out of the general education program, but that is not actual savings to the bill because it does get added back later on, and that's just a mechanical changing of where QComp will get appropriated into the future. And so, Mr. Chairman, that the 118 savings for general education is does constitute the bulk of what we have brought forth to you today. There are some other levies of note. The Safe Schools levy has been increased to allow intermediate school districts to participate in that program. On line 44 is the add back of the QComp or the Alternative Compensation Program. And on line 44, the Career and Technical Program receives a slight increase to that program of about $2.1 million. Mr. Chairman, I think that really is the primary story. The governor had some recommendations to update the abatement levy or the abatement aid and levy calculations because there were some the levies that we had in abatements was out of the levies that we were carrying in the abatements were out of sync with the levies that were actually on the books. So there's some updates to that creates some levy savings and a little bit of spending on the aid side, which I neglected to mention prior to that. On the very final page,
on line 173, total certified levies, members will note that under that in Payo 7, the total K-12 levies were estimated under the February forecast at $1.774 billion, estimated to grow in tax payable 2008 to $1.985 billion. The Senate proposal before you is at 1.875, an increase of $100 million over the prior year, but the increase as a percentage is 5.6, and under the February forecast, it was at 11.8. So there has been some growth controlled, and the total levy savings is about $110 million. Mr. Chairman, members, other questions?
Sir Squay.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Nauman. So the way I'm reading this, the levies were, without any changes in law, would have gone up by $209 or $10 million, and with the bill before us today, you're going to reduce that increase by $109 million. Am I reading this correctly?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Skoy, based on the February forecast estimates, you are indeed reading the bill correctly, or the tracking correctly.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf just asked me if you had the data runs that showed how this, the levy buy down and the consolidation affect districts, and you do have a run that looks like this. All the districts down the left-hand side, it's titled 2007 E-12 Finance Bill, General Education Levies, Senate versus Current Law. And it might, this might be a good point to kind of go through, because I think this allows you to see in an individual district how the consolidation works. If members are with me, I'll just pick, how about South St. Paul, District Number 6 on the first page. That district had $348,000 of equity, $385,000
of... Mr. Norman, what line are we on?
Mr. Chairman, I'm looking at South St. Paul, which is school district number 6 coming down.
Okay.
The third or fourth one down, fifth one down. And then $91,000 of transition levy. There was no consolidation levy under the February forecast, but I just left it there for illustrative purposes. So the total for South St. Paul was $825,000 of levy under general education. Then you move to the Senate bill. Equity, operating capital, and transition are all zeroed out. And South St. Paul levies have dropped to, under the consolidated levy, at $362,000. So on the far right-hand column, a savings of $463,000. The way this levy works is under current law, we have those three levies are established with an equalizing factor. The legislature writes into law how much we're going to equalize, and it's a number that we divide by the district's, each district's property value per pupil. If you are above that number, there is no equalization. If you're below that number, your equalization is a mix of, I mean, your revenue is a mix of aid and levy. As your property value grows, you become wealthier to the formulas, and what that has the impact of is sliding you further down the line, increasing your levy increasing your levy and reducing your aid. Under this bill, and we'll get to this when we go through the language, we are establishing a total dollar value each year that is collected, and instructing the department to make a calculation that imposes that levy at an even rate across all districts. So the burden will be the same, and it will across districts, and it will be locked in, so that the property valuation changes will not fluctuate a levy. We'll collect the same amount statewide. So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Stumpf had asked me to next move on to going through Article 1, because that is where the consolidation happens in most of general education. But I'm happy to deal with any questions of this before I do that.
Mr. Nauman, the school districts that have on the column of the on the right.
Ah, yes, I neglected to mention that.
The consolidated levy adjustments, if we see a negative in that column, that's actually a property tax increase in that district because of the general education nature of the levy being spread on all the property?
Mr. Chairman, I apologize for, in my haste at trying to get through things, I did neglect this piece, and this is somewhat important in a few districts across the state. When the consolidation is made, some districts actually, and the buy-down occurs, there are some districts that do have an increase as a result of the consolidation, and it has to do with the mix of their property as well as some of the vagaries of whether a school district received revenue off of the particular, the amount of revenue that a district happened to receive off of those three line items, equity, operating, capital, and transition. As a result of that, we created a one-time adjustment to hold those districts harmless so that every district would receive at least zero impact as a result of the consolidation. Most districts, in fact, do see savings.
Mr. Chairman, and if I understood your question, the far right column, if you mentioned that it was a negative, if it was in parentheses?
No, or Senator Stumpf, it was the consolidated levy adjustment, which is second column from the right. Now, Mr. Nauman, I assume that those districts that have a negative in that column must be a lot of districts that have a lot of seasonal rec property that are now on the gen ed levy. Would that be accurate?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, Mr. Chairman, I think you'd probably be a better gauge of that than I, understanding the mix of property in hypothetically Cook County better than I, but I think that might be a fair estimation.
Well, I see that Reamer's kind of in the same situation. I don't, Senator Skoy might know Reamer better than I do, but there's a lot of lakes around that region also. I suspect when we put that gen ed levy on all that seasonal rec where it's not being assessed today, that's what we're seeing.
Yes.
Good job, Mr. Nauman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you're ready, I'd like to move on to Article 1 of the bill and
please do.
Start plowing through some of the language. Again, I won't concentrate on all the sections, but try to reflect what I think is of most interest to the committee. Section 1 is technical. Section 2 relates to the Transportation Sparsity Program and a few sections that are technical in nature, getting up to Section 6, which is the definition of general education revenue. This is a section in the general education program where the individual programs are defined. Because of the rollout of QComp, we made one calculation for fiscal year 7 and 8 and then a new calculation for fiscal years 2009 and later. Section 7 is the basic revenue formula allowance calculation. This bill does not contain a formula allowance change, so it is merely a technical cleanup. Section 8 and 9 begin the calculations of the consolidated levy. And what we have done, because we are not beginning the consolidation until fiscal year 2009, we are limiting the existing operating capital aid and levy calculation for one more year. So we have defined those sections. We've added fiscal years, and we're going to do this this type of change for on the three individual levies that we have been dealing with. Though sections 8 and 9 do ultimately get repealed at the end of the article because they will effective in fiscal year 2009 because they will no longer be needed. Section 10 is the Transportation Sparsity Regression Update. Sections 11, 12, and 13 are a streamlining under the governor's recommendation of the equity program. Equity is one of our more complicated calculations, and the department came in with a nice cleanup that seemed to reflect the integrity of the original purpose.
The equity levy elimination as part of the consolidation occurs in Section 14 and 15. Again, we're limiting the levy and aid calculations for one more year. As part of that equity streamlining, there are a few districts that end up with some negatives, and so we have a hold harmless through the transition revenue calculations in Section 17 and 18. And then again, our third of three limitations on the levies, transition and aid calculations in Section 18 and 19. Section 20 begins the rollout and the limitation on the QCOMP program. Some obsolete language is struck in the middle of the page, and then a limitation on QCOMP as part of general education for one more year. On the top of page 10, line 10.4, is the reduced number that reflects the elimination of the growth assumption. That occurs in that section. Section 21 limits the levy to one more year. As part of general education, this language, sections 21 and 22, ultimately get added back into in Article 2 as part of the add back of the QCOMP for those existing districts. Mr. Chairman, sections 23, 24, and 25 are the creation of the consolidated levy. And members will note that on line 10.3, looking at fiscal year 2009, there's that $119 million that I mentioned previously that ties directly to the spreadsheet. Members will note that there is some growth that occurs year to year, and that's because the existing formulas based on property wealth and other factors had some assumed growth in it, and we frankly didn't have sufficient target to leave it flat for the first 3 years. But after fiscal year 2011, the total levy, the total consolidated levy will remain at $148 million statewide. Then there's the actual calculation on the consolidation on line 24. And then in the off chance that there were a few districts that would ever fall, that their general ed would reduce would be higher than the amount that the levy would produce, there's a calculation to bring them back down. Mr. Chairman and members, a new calculation for general education aid was required in Section 26 to reflect the new consolidated levy environment. Under the governor recommended and the bill accepted a deduction for districts that are producing wind energy, fairly small. We thought we would do this before it became too large. Some districts are receiving revenue as a result of that, and how we deal with some. This is consistent with how we've dealt with other energy producing revenue lines for school districts. The maintenance of effort issue, primarily special ed, in Section 28. Section 29 is the increase to the Safe Schools levy for intermediate school districts. Technical Section 30, and then the abatements and tax increment statutes are included. Sections 32, 33. These are updates for the levies that we currently have in the system. These statutes were out of sync with those levies, so those provisions are included. And then, Mr. Chairman, Section 36 is the limitation on QCOMP for the next couple of years. Section 37 is that line on the data run that you pointed out, the consolidated levy adjustment. This is where that calculation is made. The Tax Committee's Education Improvement Account is Section 38. That's where we bring the money in. Some declining pupil unit aid for Browns Valley, and then a school finance study in Section 41.
Mr. Nauman, on Section 38, did that $75 million be $78 million?
Mr. Chairman, good eye. We have amended that in the. You're looking at the raw bill and the.
I'm looking at the summary.
Oh, I apologize. The summary would not reflect the amendments that you just loaded.
And in 09, the number stayed 83.3?
Yes, it did, Mr. Chairman. Then we have the appropriations, Mr. Chairman, and the repealers. At the end of the article, there's a couple of old statutes that are being removed. The rollout of QCOMP is the C portion. The B portion reflects the consolidated levy statutes that are no longer needed in that environment.
Mr. Chairman, if you would like me to go through the language of the Article 2. Article 2 is the Education Excellence article. And the main highlights is, as Mr. Nauman has mentioned, what we did for the alternative compensation or the QCOMP program was to take it out of the Article 1, which is the general education article, and we moved it to Article 2. So that, on the spreadsheet, when Mr. Nauman talked about rolling out, actually in Article 2, which is the education excellence article, we roll the alternative compensation, or QCOM, back in. There's provisions in here to allow in Section 4 to allow international international baccalaureate to the list of initiatives. I believe the governor's language included that. There's a provision in here to on Section 6, this was legislation that was passed from the Policy Committee, and Senator Wieger heard a number of proposals. We just found out, I believe yesterday, that this was legislation that was promoted, at least from the information I have from Senator Wieger, was promoted by the school counselors. They changed their mind and do not want the legislation that you currently see here. And so he approached me yesterday and asked if we would delete that Section 6 from the bill. I'd ask if somebody would like to.
So that deletion, out. Senator Stump, wasn't in your A5 amendment?
No, Mr. Chairman, I thought that the A5 amendment should just take care of the kind of the technical issues that have been addressed. So that was not.
I would move that, Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman moves on page Article 2, Section 6, on page 29 and 30, be deleted.
Mr. Chair, may I ask what the effective, what does this say and what does this do in terms of the elimination?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Senjum, it has to do with school counselors and those other individuals. I believe the issue that has not been resolved amongst the school counselors is what their role will be in terms of supervision over non-school counselors. And so I think that they did not understand the amendment when they had, or the bill when it passed out of Senator Wieger's Education Policy Committee. And so when he approached me yesterday, he said that the school counselors were realizing it did not do what they wanted it to do.
Okay.
And so that's why they wanted it changed. And I think it has to do with their supervision or something over the non-school counselors.
Yeah. Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, I've kind of caught up now in the summary, so I'm aware.
On the Ortman Amendment to delete Section 6 in Article 2. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Section 7 is the alternative compensation add back in the aid. Section 8 is the add back in the levy. So, from a school district's perspective that is currently receiving Q comp, or is in Q comp, or is in the immediate pipeline of Q comp, they will not see any difference. The rationale for what we did was basically that we wanted to freeze the number, and I believe the number, I believe there's like 34 districts that are currently receiving it and some that are going to study it for a period of 4 years, to look at it and see if it's doing what, if it's producing results like it should. The information we got is that many of these programs, it takes 5 to 7 years really to even test them to see whether they're successful. So that's the purpose of what we did in that area. The other program that I believe it's also in this article where we limit the number of charter schools. We currently have about 133 charter schools in the state. And that's on page 34 in article or section 13. There's also a number of charter schools that are in the pipeline, and I believe that's 19 charter schools. What we wanted to do is to try to initiate a discussion about how does the charter schools fit into the overall education plan for the state of Minnesota. There really is no real consistency in terms where charter schools are being opened up. There's been some discussion in committee about school districts that are existing school districts that are actually going into statutory operating debt with a new charter school opening up only a few blocks away from the existing school district. And I think that the charter schools are definitely a part of our public school system, but we have no real big picture of how they all kind of work together. We have worked out some issues, and the one issue that has been worked out has been the special education funding stream. But there are other issues like transportation and facilities. One of the big charter school issues is we currently are spending lease money. They do not have the authority to own facilities. And so the state of Minnesota, through the lease aid, is basically providing facilities or money for those charters to lease. And several times over the years that I've been here, the Department of Administration has repeatedly, and Senator Langseth, I think, I think he'd back this up, has repeatedly come in, and the department has said that when you look at leasing versus ownership, the taxpayers are always better off with ownership. They have something. And so, obviously we lease, as a state, we lease facilities here and there temporarily, but generally the direction in the long-term benefits for the taxpayers is that there is an ownership stake in what we do.
Senator Stump, that number, that cap of 150, is that number high enough so that it will allow the people who have expended time and effort on the development of a charter school to be included, or are we going to have some people who have maybe expended quite a bit of time and effort now have the door slammed on?
Mr. Chairman, the 150 allows the expansion for the next year. There were two provisions. The cap is one provision. The other provision was the there's federal startup aid for charter schools, and there's state startup aid for charter schools. The federal aid is $180,000 for 3 years. The state charter school startup is a smaller component, but and I think there was certainly quite a discussion about this in previous committees. We recaptured the startup aid, but I don't think we adequately covered the startup aid for those who were going up to that 150 cap. And so we're looking at trying to make some, get the right information and make the right adjustment in that area.
Okay.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I think I think it's language that is self-explanatory. We have a couple of things that I will point out. Sections of that article, sections 24, 25, a number of sections that were added that try to get at what I mentioned earlier about addressing some earlier interventions. And Senator Salzman, Senator Olson have been working on a number of ideas there. And that pretty much takes us up to the appropriations section. And would move on to.
Chair.
Senator.
Could you just adjust, let's see, section 24 a little bit? That we always hear about mandates when we go home. What is this one about, and how extensive is this going to be?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Senjum, I think the discussion in committee was this was something that was brought to the Education Policy Committee. And I believe passed that committee. It was brought to them by the PTA, Parent Teacher Association.
Okay.
In visiting with the School Boards Association, I think for the most part there already is policy. They have policy, and I don't know if it's 100%, but I believe it's pretty uniform across the state. Already on the books. I think this spells out a few more details. That's about all I know about that.
Thank you.
Section Article 3 in special programs, and I'll maybe have Mr. Nauman run through that. That's the special education section.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'll begin on, page 51 of the bill. Under the governor's recommendation, there was, I think I mentioned this previously, a change from current law. Districts are paid for special education services based on a two-year lagging payment, so for costs associated with from 2 years ago. The governor recommended, and the Senate bill included, that change. So we update to a current year system. It's felt that we are in a position now as a state to be able to make those payments more quickly. So if a school district gets hit with a high-cost special ed student, the payments would more quickly reflect the cost associated with providing that child's education. So there's a lot of pieces in this article that deal primarily with that. Sections 1 and 2 make those changes. We're striking language in most cases to get rid of a base year calculation that is no longer necessary. Section 4 is a change to the LEP, Limited English Proficiency Statute, that allows services to be provided at a non-public school. This was a Senator Roebling provision. Under current law, non-public students can be provided LEP services at either the district site or a neutral site, but not at a non-public site. So this makes that change. Some cleanup in Section 5. A definitional change to conform with federal law in Section 6. Section 7 is some minor changes to reflect some current practice in Section 7. In Section 8, the roll-in of Part C, which we talked about in the spreadsheet, into regular education occurs. Senator Pogemiller had a reporting provision cost for litigation costs associated with special education. That's included in the bill, Section 9. Then special education regular definitional changes in Section 10, the elimination of the base year. And then on line 60.12 through 60.13 is the reinstatement of the special education program growth factor at 1.046. That's that 4.6% growth that we talked about earlier. Section 11 continues the update for the base year of the current year funding and some technical changes associated with the definitions of general education for the purposes of special ed. Then transition disabled is added on lines 60.19 and 60.20, and we're deleting some obsolete language associated with the two-year lagging payment. The entitlements in Section 12 for regular special education are set. And again, this reflects the funding of the cap gap as well as the 4.6% growth factor and the roll-ins of transition disabled and the Part C. Section 13 eliminates some old base funding mechanisms which are no longer needed in a current year environment. And Section 14 sets the program growth factor for excess cost special education. These are the high burden school districts that have high special ed costs at 2%. So that program will escalate at 2% per year. And the entitlements for that program in Section 16 are set and laid forth there. Some new definitions of general education. Again, we've done this in a couple other sections already. For the purposes of special ed out-of-state tuition, and some technical changes in Section 18 to specify that referendum aid actually means referendum equalization aid. The unique nature of this bill is that we are going back and making changes to fiscal year 2007 appropriations in both regular excess cost and transition disabled. Those occur in Sections 19, 20, and 21.
Mr. Norman, what month do those get paid out in?
Mr. Chairman, we did do some research on that, and since you brought it up, I'll walk you through it. If we assume that this were to become law on or about the end last week of session or so, it passed and potentially signed by the governor 10 days later, there would only be two payments left in the fiscal year. As it works through the Department of Finance, our sense is that they wouldn't actually be able to make the final May, I think, 30th payment, so that would leave one payment left, and we've visited with both the Department of Finance and the Department of Education to ensure that they do, in fact, have the cash flow to make this happen. And the response from both departments is that they think that they could make it.
Before June 30th?
Mr. Chairman, yes. I think the final payment is June 20th. Mr. Melcher is visiting with Ed Cook, but I think that that's right. So there would be a large, roughly $126 million payment to reflect this on June 20th. Mr. Chairman and members, there is a one-year extension to the waivers on the new tuition billing system. This is a new system for paying special education to districts and charter schools. It was adopted, I believe, in the 2005 bill. Some of the intermediate school districts have had some difficulty transitioning into that program because such a high proportion of their budget is, in fact, special ed, so we're giving them one additional year under that. The transition disabled program is being rolled into special ed, but in order to accomplish the cap gap funding in fiscal year 2007, we are and that section is actually being repealed out of current law under this language, so we're just establishing what the what the entitlement for fiscal year 2007 is, and that's done in Section 27. And then you have the normal appropriations that you would expect in this bill, and then the repealers that I mentioned.
Mr. Chairman and members, Article 4 relates to the facilities and technology area. And the first number of pages, pages 70 through 75, relate to a proposal that Senator Rosen brought. And actually, there were changes to the cooperation and combination statutes for school districts. Have no fiscal impact unless Senator Langseth gets a real large target and funds put some money into that area. And I'm not we're not going to hold our breath. Sections 5 relate back to job Z changes, and section 6 relate to the debt service appropriation. That's the appropriation for that area. Section 7, again, is a job Z change, and there's some ballot language change in Section 8 relating to the capital project levy referendum. It just clarifies that it can't be for more than 10 years. And there is an extension of the ICE Arena levy. Remember back in 2003 when a number of levies were changed from 100% to 90%, and then we pulled back, or we reinstated 100% for like the unemployment levy and a few of them. I think this is maybe the end of those 90% levies for the ICE Arena. Sections 11 and sections 13 and sections 11, 14, and 15 relate to the extension of the bonding authority for St. Paul and Minneapolis. They both currently have a bonding authority to maintain their buildings at $15 million per year. What this does is extend it 4 years, another 4 years. Section 13, Senator Lynch brought a proposal which was, it actually moves the date for the certifying of the levy up. And so that was on or before October 5th. Section 16 was a lease levy for administrative space in Spring Lake Park. And 17 was for demolition of a building in a school building in Clearbrook Donvig. Section 18 is part of that environmental mercury cleanup for Senator Dill and Fishbox area. What this does is allows the levy, the school district, to levy the $126,000, and then, as was mentioned earlier, they pay that back over a period of 5 years, and then the appropriations for the different sections. I believe.
It should have the appropriations, I think.
Is that it? Oh yeah. Then section or Article 5. Is the nutrition and accounting. The first section is a structurally balanced school district budget provision. And section 2 was some legislation that Senator Carlson brought, which eliminates a number of reserve accounts that were not needed. Section 3 increases the school lunch reimbursement by 1.5 cents. Doesn't seem like it's a lot, but it means a lot to those school lunch programs. Some updates in Section 5, and then
there's
Mr. Nolan.
Mr. Chairman and members, in the event that the Tax Committee actually makes some adjustments to the tax base in your tax bill this year, we've included Section 5 to essentially hold the K-12 bill harmless. The idea is that the department would make some calculations to equalizing factors and tax rates associated with any tax base changes that might be made in the tax bill. It's a way of adjusting the K-12 bill without having to carry any money for it.
And then, Mr. Chairman, the fund transfers in Section 6. Two of the fund transfers carried a cost of Floodwood and Red Rock. Those two we had a buyout, but the others were non-cost. And then Section 7 is the appropriation section.
Senator Stump? Maybe before we leave that article, Senator Skoy, Article 5.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think that there's a provision here that has some property tax implications, and I'd like to move the A8 amendment, and if we could get that passed out. You know, this is a provision that was put into law a few years ago and to try to provide information to the public and keep the property tax levy down and have help schools with their budget. But, you know, I just don't think it's working very well. And when I look at the time and the effort that schools are putting into trying to comply with this and really the, you know, the increases that we're seeing in property taxes over the last number of years, I don't think it's working. And so I would move the A8 amendment.
So, members, this, the A8 amendment deletes Section 1 article in Article 5.
Yeah, repeals the existing law.
And repeals existing law.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Limmer.
I was just catching up to Senator Skoy's amendment. Could you repeat for me, Senator Skoy, what Article 5, Section 1 is all about?
Well, what's happening here is there's a provision in current law that has school districts trying to anticipate and forecast what their revenue is going to be, and as we know, the school districts really can't do that because that's a legislative function. And this provision is extending this out to another year or two is from what my reading is, and I certainly don't think that's a good idea, and I really would like to repeal the whole provision. It's just not working for the school districts. You know, it was supposed to designed to help the provide, you know, the public with better information so that the school districts could keep their levies down, I believe, and it just hasn't worked. And earlier today we've talked about the projected property tax increases that school districts have coming, and so I'm proposing that we remove this. It's the only time I see the bill.
Senator Pogemiller, Senator Skoy is becoming a spender.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't believe this has any fiscal implication other than it might save the school district some money and that they don't have to spend all the time and effort to produce these use unnecessary reports. I didn't say it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hartman.
Mr. Chair and Senator Skoy, what leads you to believe that they're useless and unnecessary reports if they're reporting to the public about what's happening with the school's finances?
Well, I think that the goal was to have a positive impact on property tax increase, and I don't think they've been accomplishing that. And I don't think that the school board is able to forecast revenues. And, you know, as we've had discussion many times this session, you know, inflation is occurring. I don't know how we can ask the school boards to forecast those things.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Hey, Mr. Chair, I hope I'm reading this, the Section 5 that this amendment is referring to. It was Section 1, Article 5 of the bill. Is that the right one?
Article 5, Section 1.
Section 1.
Article 5, Section 1.
What page are you on?
84.
Mr. Chair, as I'm not exactly sure how a school district analyzes their budgets. I think they analyze their budgets every day. They try to anticipate how they're going to fulfill their responsibilities as a school board or as a school administration. And we're wanting to repeal not only the new language, but repeal the whole provision of Article 5. I'm looking, this is on nutrition and accounting. Is that the Article 5 you're talking of? Found on page 84?
Yeah, Article 5, nutrition and accounting.
As I read the existing law, Mr. Chair, they're talking about keeping an accountability and consideration of structurally balanced school district budgets. Got a little bit about doing things prior to approving a collective bargaining agreement. That the school board has to consider structural imbalance. If expenditures will not exceed available funds, taking into account current state aid formulas and comprehensive projections of ongoing revenues. School board must project revenues, expenditures, and fund balances for current language 1 year following a period of agreement. I'm just skimming this like our other members are, but we don't want to put a charge on a school district to consider these things? Is that the gist of your amendment, Senator Squay?
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Limmer, this has been in place for a few years, and under this proposal it's actually being expanded, and I didn't think that the original language is working, and I certainly don't support expanding it.
Well, Mr. President, I'm giving you a lofty improvement to your title.
I don't think so, Senator Limmer.
Yeah, maybe not. Mr. Chair, what would you place instead of this responsibility? Are you suggesting new language?
Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, no, I'm not. I'm suggesting that the elected officials of the local school boards can do their negotiations and deal with their budgets as they have in the past, and really have done a pretty good job. And this provision came along a few years ago, and now they're filling out reports and doing this stuff, and I don't think it's had a positive impact.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Senator Stumpf, there were changes to this section made in your committee, I'm assuming, or maybe in the policy committee. Who proposed these changes, and what was the testimony in support?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, the proposal, I believe, came in with Senator Carlson, if I'm not mistaken, in legislation that he wanted to eliminate a bunch of accounts, reserves, and kind of clean up stuff. And then the discussion kind of centered around this and whether this really worked, and a little bit of, I think, what Senator Scoy's arguments are. This was taken out of the proposal Senator Carlson had. So in other words, it was discussed, and they were going to rework it and try to make this work. So that's kind of where it came from, the addition of the 2 years And then that came to our committee, and so it was consequently put in because it had came from Senator Wieger's committee. I don't know. I think there has been the discussion. I believe Mr. Bartholomew gave some discussion about that there were some districts that I believe were revenues were going up. Revenues in the reserves were going down at the same time costs were going up. Anyway, I think it probably would be good, you know, to have some of the school people talk about the impact, if there was an impact to this. I honestly don't know. The question I have, too, is on 85.19 about the 2 years. Because when this was put in place, I believe, back in 2005, I think the concern back then was is how do you balance a budget on revenues that you don't know what the revenues are going to be. And I think at that time it got delayed to 1 year because I think the governor's original language had 2 years. No, I think the governor's original language had two bienniums. But there's just really no, I mean, how do you really know what your financial situation is going to be out that far? So that's kind of the gist of it. I don't know if it has had any real long or has had any impact on but probably would be good to
Senator Stump, should we hear from the department?
Sure.
Senator Pogomar.
Just curiosity, is this a tax matter?
Well, we have an amendment in front of us, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Chair, Mr. Chair, that was my next question, is does this amendment fit into the jurisdiction of what we're considering in this bill? This seems like a policy discussion and not a matter for the tax committee.
Senator Portman.
Senator
Stump?
I don't know the merits of the issue, frankly.
When this originally came, Senator Kelly and I spent quite a bit of time trying to figure out how in the world would you ever make this thing work. And we kind of doctored it up a little bit, but I honestly don't think it does what it was really intended to do. But and now with 2 years, I even question that more. But
Mr. Chair?
Senator Limmer.
Senator Stumpf, did you have a discussion with your committee as you added the amendments to this article? Did you have a discussion of whether or not you should keep this whole provision in law?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Limmer, no. The legislation came from Senator Wieger's committee to our committee, and the time frame was so tight. Basically, a lot of the things that came out of his committee we talked about, but not in any real discussion in depth. Anyway,
you got to get Limmer promise not to put it back in.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand why Senator Skoy has brought the motion or the amendment here. I don't understand why the author's determination, after it's been through so many committees, should be determinative as to whether we should take the issue up in this committee. I'm not sure that fits well, but it seems to me that we have some important school finance accountability issues here that we shouldn't be taking out in the tax committee. There's thought that's gone into this. It's been here for a couple of years. The policy committee adopted it, I'm sure with some consideration. But the residents have a right to rely on this now, and I think it makes perfect sense. The school districts that I know of all have controllers who can project revenues, and it's a projection. It's not a guarantee. They can project revenues, and they can project expenditures. And more importantly, we're actually asking the school districts to do the same thing that we here in the Senate are saying we should be doing with our budget, which is not to spend one-time money in ongoing expenditures and to follow the tails. And I think that's good budgeting practice. And I think this language makes perfect sense. And so I would oppose the Senator Scoy's amendment, whether the author agrees or not, whether there's jurisdiction or not. I think it makes perfect sense to keep this in law. I hope the committee would respect the work of the policy committee that did this and made the adjustments here and considered it.
On the Scoy aid amendment, roll all in call. Favor signify by
roll
saying
call.
Aye.
Roll
aye.
Call.
Mr. Chair, he was asking for a roll call.
I asked for a roll call.
Senator Limmer would like a roll call. Clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Larson?
Aye.
Limmer?
No.
Marty? Absent. Law? Burton?
No.
Holzmiller? Benjamin?
No.
Sieben?
Aye.
Scoy?
Aye.
Law?
Aye. Can you whisper a vote in the committee, Mr.
Power
Chair?
The power of the chair. Chair votes aye. We'll see it on the floor. Better than that. There being six ayes and four noes, the amendment or the motion prevails, the aid amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Pogomir.
Senator Limmer, I voted with you on that one. That's been an hour on this.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wortman.
I just asked our researcher to help me prepare an amendment on that one. So regardless of Senator Limmer's answer, I think you're going to see that one on the floor.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Senator Pogomir. I'm not the only one that can control an hour of time on the Senate floor.
Senator Stump, let's continue.
Okay.
The committee's doing good work.
Mr. Chairman, you just lightened my load. Article 6, which is the library article, we have in the appropriations increased the funding to our libraries and complementary also the funding to our telecommunications aid to the libraries and schools. Article 7 is the early childhood article, and Mr. Chairman, the amendment that was adopted early on took out a number of parts of this article, and I think what I'll do is ask Mr. Nauman to just tell you which parts of this article that are still remaining.
Is this?
Mr. Chairman and members, just briefly going through it, the beginning of Article 7 stays basically intact. It's the end that has been removed. Section 1 is technical, clarifying that Head Start and students be paid on programs be paid on children served. There's some opt-out provisions for parents who would prefer not to have their kids participate in the health and developmental screening aid provisions. Section 7 increases the correction 3 increases the health and developmental screening aid. Section 4 is an update to current practice, and Section 5 requires ECFE programs to file a plan and program data to the department before certifying levies. It conforms with current practice in other programs. Mr. Chairman and members, Section 7 is the ECFE levy. It's primarily cleanup, but it does add that provision that says that the program plans and program data must be filed with the department prior to levy certification. Section 8 allows 10% of ECFE revenue to be spent on certain operating capital expenditures. Section 9 is current practice. Section 10 clarifies that school readiness programs include a literacy component. And Section 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 have been eliminated from the bill and left here in the Tax Committee, as is Subdivision 8 on the appropriations on page 105. That's the balance of the article, Mr. Chairman.
I got to check.
Article 8 relates to the prevention, and I believe there's just the appropriations. Article 9 relates to the self-sufficiency and lifelong learning. There's an increase in the educational or the aid payment for testing for GED. Also, I wanted to point out, this came up several times in the committee discussion, Subdivision 2 on page 107, lines 107.20, the adult basic aid in the appropriations, as you can see, has an increased amount each of the year 2007, 8, and 9. That reflects legislation that was passed in 2005 to put a growth factor in to address the adult basic education aid. And then Article 10, and then the appropriations for that article. Article 10 relates to the state agencies, and Mr. Nauman maybe can touch on that.
Mr. Chairman and members, there of primary note is the section. There's some rulemaking authority. There's a cross-subsidy report. All bills, as I mentioned when we went through the tracking, all funding bills carry a 3.25% increase for state employee compensation. That's Section 4. Then the department funding, Section 5, with a series of riders, the appropriations for the Purpich and Minnesota State Academies. And then, Mr. Chairman and members, Article 11 is primarily technical in nature. It does updates for the February forecast for fiscal year 2007. This is a traditional one of the concluding articles in the K-12 bill that just updates for forecast adjustments. Of particular note this year, the special education accounts are not included in the updates because we went back and made some adjustments to that in Article 3. And Article 12 is the technical and conforming amendments that we get annually from the revisor to clean up bad language and other things of a technical nature that the revisor feels are important. Mr. Chairman, that concludes the E-12 finance bill for 2007.
Senator Hartman.
Mr. Chair, if I could ask a question, I hope the committee will forgive me. I had some mandatory parent involvement this morning. I have four kids, all school age. My question would be about the $75 million for the that comes from the business property tax. I'm wondering how does that play out in the out years? And when we looked at our tax bill, it had $220 million in this biennium from the business property tax. 150 of it essentially would go to LGA and 75 million to fund general education and special education in particular right here. But what happens in the next biennium? Because with the business property tax, it goes up to 466 million. I'm wondering, how are those funds then going to be used in the out years to fund your education funding?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, the first piece is that there is no levy component of special education. The $75 million, now $78 million, that was added in an early amendment before you walked in, it's $78 million in fiscal year 2007, and it's at a lower amount in 2009 than it is in the out years because of the peculiarities of the K-12 finance system. It does have a tail on it. You'll notice that in the section, it turns into $83.3 million in fiscal year 2010 and later.
It's that later that I'm trying to get at. How much does it get to in the out years?
Well, Mr. Chairman and Senator Orman, perhaps I can take you to the bill, and maybe that would help. If we're in Article 1, just a moment, let me get the right page. Mr. Chairman, Senator Ortman, I'm on page 10, section 23 of the bill. On line 30 and 31. What the consolidated levy does that is different than under current law, and this is where you see that operationalized, is establish the total amount of state levy that will occur in general education. Right now, it floats based on we establish an equalizing factor, and the wealthier your school district is, if you're above that equalizing factor of tax base per pupil, there will be no equalization. If you are below that equalizing factor, your revenue off of equity, operating capital, and transition will be a mix of aid and levy, and the higher you go, the closer you get to that equalizing factor, the less state aid you receive. Under the changes, we have accumulated the monetary value of all those levies and bought them down by $100 million, and I can explain the difference between that and the 75 if you want to get into that. But we lock into law what the amount of state levy in general education will be. So you see in fiscal year 2009, it's $119 million. In fiscal year 2010, it's roughly 35, and then 149 in fiscal year 2011 and later. So to the extent that you're interested in how much the later is in the first 2 years, you can see it does have a slight amount of growth on it, and that's because we didn't have a sufficient target to buy it down so that it would be flat initially. But after fiscal year 2011, barring a legislative change that would increase or reduce that number, it will stay at $148.6 million statewide. I hope that answers your question.
Mr. Chair, in some ways it does. It's a very complicated matter, but when you talk about the consolidated levy, you're talking about money that's coming from the business property tax, and you're also talking about money that's coming from the individual levies, and you're talking about a consolidated levy amount. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Ortman, you'll have to forgive me. In some respects, you're dealing with a question that is blending some of the tax issues and some of the K-12 issues. From my perspective, I answered the K-12 side, which I felt more comfortable with, the consolidation and the buy-down and the imposition of that levy at an even rate across all school districts so that the burdens would be the same. In terms of where that 75 comes from and the peculiarities of how that money is the 78, and how that is raised, it is my understanding that you're dealing with this question in your committee. In fact, the tracking of that $78 million, that will occur as a tax expenditure in this committee when you produce the tax bill. We're not carrying that as a cost here. We are spending it, but that is something that you are tracking as an expenditure.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ortman, I think when the tax bill spreadsheet comes out, I think you'll get an answer to your question of how much the business property tax raises and then how much money is spent in the tax bill. But it'll be tracked there.
And that's my question is, with the 220, I understand what's happening in this this future biennium, but I don't know what happens in the following biennium with the $466 million that we raise on the business property tax, whether some of that is going to go back into general education like the $78 million that Mr. Nauman is talking about, or whether it's going to be distributed differently than it is in the next biennium. Next biennium, you've got LGA and general education. I'm trying to figure out what happens beyond that to the business property tax.
Well, that's probably a discussion for next week, but And I don't think we totally know the total answer to that yet. But in 10 and 11, I believe we're carrying a little over $83 million each year in new money in 10 and 11 instead of 78 in this biennium. We also, I hope to carry the upfront capital purchase exemption, which is around $130 million in the 2 years, the single sales ratio, which is about 70 in the two bienniums. So there's a number of other things the business community is getting in the bill, I hope, if the committee is going to agree to that.
Mr. Chair, then the business property tax increases are not necessarily going just to education.
No.
That was, I guess, what I'm trying to get at. It's going to be distributed in several different ways, but not all dedicated
correct.
To education. Okay.
Some will go to property tax relief. Some will go to business relief through the upfront capital exemption and some through the accelerating the single sales.
Mr. Chair, is it possible to ask if anyone would like to testify about the business community's response to this change in policy?
Well, they're not carrying the tax increase in this bill, so I think that's probably a discussion better to be had in front of the tax committee, not when we have this bill in front of us. But they're not carrying the tax increase. The tax bill will.
Well, Mr. Chair, I believe that Mr. Bartholomew would be interested in testifying just to make sure that their concerns, the business partnership's concerns, are at least raised in the tax committee, because this is the bill that it impacts, that $75 million. And I would appreciate just a few minutes for him to at least present his position.
I think it would be more appropriate to do that when we have the spreadsheet on the tax bill out, so that the partnership or the chamber can see in total, I think, what's happening with the business property tax, because this is only a small piece, and all they're doing is spending it. The tax committee is the one carrying it on our spreadsheet. So I think the more appropriate time is next week.
Mr. Chair, what I'm concerned about is we're going to have this bill on the floor before we get that testimony, and I'd like to hear the testimony before we take up this bill that has such a significant portion of its funding from the business property tax.
Senator Ortman, this bill is not raising any business property taxes in it. All it's doing is spending money that the tax committee gives them. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the opening comments, Senator Stump, the chief author of the bill, was explaining in outline form some of the major elements of the bill, and one of those was to consolidate three levies, operations, equity, and transition, into one levy known as a consolidated levy. The bill also shifts more state funding to special education needs as a major element of this bill. However, Senator Stump said that the balance would be taken up by additional funds. And I don't know if we necessarily got into a lot of detail about the additional funds. Now, Senator Ortman is bringing up the discussion that these additional funds, I'm assuming, is another tax source, an expanded tax source. And in order for us to adequately understand this bill, I believe we need to talk about what these additional funds are, where they're coming from, and what impact they're going to have on a classification of taxpayer that right now does not have that responsibility to that degree. So I think Senator Ortman's discussion is timely for this moment in front of our tax committee.
Well, Senator Limmer, I think it would the appropriate discussion is to talk about what's in the E-12 bill. And certainly this committee is going to have a discussion if there's additional revenue raised, additional money spent on schools. That's a discussion that's certainly going to happen in this committee, but that issue is not in front of us today. What's in front of us today is the E-12 bill that Senator Stump has brought to us.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Stump, I listened carefully to his opening comments, and he said that as we try to affect the goals of his bill, these additional funds were needed to allow another sub-goal, and that was to lower property tax costs by $100 million in property tax, and that these additional funds, which right now are seen rather mysteriously in a fog, that was critically needed, and in his words, to stabilize funding at the same time we cut property tax. So that certainly is in the jurisdiction of this discussion.
Senator Pogemeyer.
Mr. Chairman, I've been eagerly waiting for the bill because I have been looking at the levy tracking sheet. I think this committee would enthusiastically support that because we all know that there's a property tax challenge existing in the state. And this bill lowers property taxes $102 billion from projection increases. That's
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, that's $110
million.
Right, where's the other? Yeah, I've got just
on the last sheet of the levy tracking sheet, if you go to line 160, all right, I'm sorry, go to line 173, the total certified levies, you'll see over in the
about the middle of the page,
109.979. Those are the reductions. It cuts the property tax increases from 11.8 to about 5.6.
Can we vote?
Mr.
Yes,
Chair.
No,
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm finally enjoying a good conversation on this issue. I love to talk about any type of tax cut. And I believe you're right, Senator Pogemiller. Property taxes are high in Minnesota, as are other taxes in the state. $100 million-plus dollars is certainly a big deal, but it's also going to be a big deal for how we compensate for that $100 million in cut property taxes. Who's going to suffer the burden of that $100 million? I would imagine that someone is going to pay for it somewhere. Someone's going to have to compensate it. Who's going to pay? Do they have an opinion on it? Have they been before us in order to make this education bill work in front of this tax committee? I haven't heard from them. And I haven't heard who's going to suffer the burden of this $100 million that we're simply shifting the cost to. And I know that I've heard countless times, we're not going to do shifts, we're not going to do clouds and mirrors and all of that stuff. I've heard that conversation uniquely from the majority party many times this session. And, gee, I'm just wondering where this additional funds are going to come from, and are the taxpayers of that funding who's going to supply that, at least for the purposes of this discussion, do they even know they're going to be targeted on it? And if they are, do they have an opinion on it? And we haven't even heard from them.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Pogemeyer.
As I understand it, the tax committee, without additional revenues, has the ability to do this. It's $100 million. You don't need additional revenues from what's projected and forecast and so forth to accomplish this. I think that's within the budget. Senate without new revenues. This
is great.
Somebody else has spending over and above that. That perhaps, for example, the transportation bill yesterday. I thought Senator Murphy was very clear. To do those things, to make those investments, you needed new revenue.
I don't think
Senator Stumpf and this committee need
new revenue.
Projected increase. I think that's within the budget without.
Senator Ortman.
Mr. Chair, I think in Article 1 we have that consolidated levy requiring a district to levy the amount calculated in the subdivision. It's a tax that they must impose, they must levy. I think it's only appropriate to take a few minutes of testimony to a tax issue I don't think it's a great hardship to the members of this committee. This is what we do. We have public hearings. There's a reason why this bill is in this committee, to have a public hearing.
She wanted to speak.
And so a couple of minutes of testimony should not be too much of a hardship before we vote on a bill like this on the Senate floor.
Senator Ortman, there are only tax reductions in this bill. There aren't any tax increases in this bill. I mean, I would think that anybody that wants to come up here and testify on the bill, if they want to state the subject of the bill, there's $110 million of property tax relief in this bill. I mean, I don't know how somebody would come and testify that that's not a good thing. Senator Pogelman.
Sure, I just thought we should recognize a former tax chair in the audience.
Yeah.
The other body.
The other body.
Mr. Chair, could Mr. Bartholomew testify this morning?
Mr. Chairman,
this morning?
Just a point of clarification. There is no mandate that districts have to levy this. If in Article 1, Section 23 and 24, you can, it's not a mandate. The districts may levy.
Mr. Chair, there's a reason why this bill is in the Tax Committee, because of the tax implications. And there's no question we're going to be raising the business property tax to fund some of the activities in this bill. Mm-hmm. And so I think we've got the $75 million that's being transferred into this account. Again, you may all disagree with this testimony. I may agree, I may disagree, but it certainly would not hurt to have that testimony and a view about this bill.
Senator, I'm going to make you a deal. I would give the business partnership an opportunity to testify for 3 minutes today or 3 minutes next week, and they can pick. They can pick.
Mr. Chair, I would hope that you would allow them an opportunity to testify today and also on the other bill.
Senator Ortman, I don't think there's a reason for them to testify today. There's no tax increase in this bill. But if you'd rather hear from them today than next week, I'll let them decide which day they'd like to testify.
Mr. Chair, we've respectfully spent more time debating whether or not we should hear the testimony than it would have taken the time and the courtesy to allow a member of the public to testify about a bill when we have noticed a public hearing about this bill.
Senator Ortman, you're asking them to testify on a tax increase that's not in the bill.
Mr. Chair, ask if they would like to testify about the bill in the committee. That's fair. We ask that question in every hearing I've ever been in. Is there anyone that would like to testify about the bill before the committee, in support or in opposition? That's a fair question.
Senator Ortman, we're not going to ask people to testify on things that are not in the bill. If they'd like to come up, they can pick. If they want to come testify today or next week, I don't care, but they're going to give one opportunity to testify, just like the chamber is. And if they would like to burn that opportunity today and testify why they might be against $110 million of property tax relief, that's fine with me. I think they might have a little bit more interest in saving their powder until next week when the full tax bill's in front of this committee. But, I mean, Mr. Bartholomew, if you'd like to, you know, use your 3 minutes today, that's fine with me. If you'd like to save it for next week, that's fine with me also. Senator Pogelman.
Why not let him testify today and whenever he wants to testify? It's always a pleasure to listen to the partnership in the chamber.
Senator Pogelman, I would expect them to keep their comments to provisions in the bill.
That's fair. Mr. Chairman, that's fair.
And Mr. Chair, that's what I've asked for, is that there are two bills. Why can't they testify about the bill before the committee today and the bill before the committee next week?
Mr. Chairman, if that's what you mean, perhaps that would solve the...
I think the issue is I don't want to get outside of the bill and take testimony on things that are not in the bill. Yeah. And if somebody would like to testify on something that's in the bill, that's fine. But I think Senator Ortman's asking for something outside of that.
Mr. Chair, all I'm asking is for you to give the courtesy to anybody in the member of the public that would like to testify about this bill the opportunity to testify about this bill today.
Senator Ortman, can we do it after we get the bill amended? Council has a number of amendments yet. We sure wouldn't want to have somebody give their testimony and then find out there's an amendment that maybe negates or enhances something that they might have said. But we're going to testify to what's in the bill, not what's not in it.
Amend away, Mr. Chair.
Senator Stump, are we through the bill?
Mr. Chairman and members, yes. We are.
It's tough.
We're
going to delay it. We'll delay it.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I think that's it.
Rules committee's been delayed.
All right.
Senator Back.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A6 amendment.
Senator Back moves the A6 amendment.
Members, this was brought to me by a school board member in Ely, Minnesota. And in Ely, there's a kind of an umbrella economic development authority called the Ely Area Development Association that has quasi-governmental units. They have representatives from townships, from the hospital, from schools, from the Ely Community College, a real diverse group of people that participate on this economic development association. One of those groups is the Ely School District, and the association has made a determination that for the Ely School District to continue to participate in this broad economic development association, they would have to become a dues-paying member like everybody else that sits on this association. It's a very nominal amount of money, but I believe when they asked the department whether they could expend any of their money to participate in this civic-type organization, they were told they didn't have authority to do that. So this just gives them the authority to expend a very small amount of money so that they can have a representative on the civic association.
Is there any discussion on the A6 amendment? Senator Stump? On the A6 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, contrary? Motion prevails.
Then, Mr. Chairman, I have the A7, and I believe council has a oral amendment for it.
Senator Bach moves the A7 amendment. Ms. Zah.
Education Council.
Okay. Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Chairman and members, I think that's a little bit of a promotion, but thank you. And this is less than elegant, but I think there's some concern that there might be a levy impact to this, that this would increase some property tax levies, and the desire would be to put it off at least until taxes payable 2009, which would be fiscal year 2010. So you would add an effective date that says this section is effective for taxes payable 2009 through 2013 only.
Do members have that incorporation into the A7 amendment? Senator Bach incorporates that language into the A7 amendment. Is there any discussion to the A7 amendment? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Amendment is adopted.
As amended.
As amended.
Thank you, members. Thank you, Senator Larson. Any other amendments, members? Bill in the shape that the committee would like to see it go out of here? Might not be enough votes to pass it out anymore, Senator Stump. $110 million of property tax relief, and the chair's uncertain we can get it out of here. I can believe it. Would anybody like to testify on the amended bill? 3 minutes each. To the subject in the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Jim Bartholomew with Minnesota Business Partnership. And I'll be quick and just stick to the consolidated levy portion of the bill. And we've appreciated the opportunity to work with Senator Stump as the bill has been put together to talk about the consolidated levy and what the intentions were behind it. Was it to try to consolidate and simplify education funding, at least to some degree? Or was there another intent in largely our concern was if we were recreating a general education levy. That was a concern we had. We certainly support the effort to consolidate and simplify education funding and different levies. And I guess just the 2 points we'd offer, and again, we appreciate the time that Senator Stumpf and his staff have taken to try to work with us on this. But to the degree that the consolidated levy recreates the general education levy that was eliminated with the 01 property tax reforms, we supported those reforms, one, because they provided property tax relief, and two, because they did provide some greater transparency in school funding by eliminating the largest state-mandated property tax. One of the arguments that's been given for recreating the general education levy through the consolidated levy was that it would reduce, if we had a consolidated levy, it would reduce school district reliance on referendum levies. And as we've looked at the history of referendum levies in the state of Minnesota, and the research department and the other house has done a nice job, their chart showing the number of districts and the dollars raised by district in referendums going back to 1980. And I think it's safe to say there's very little, if any, connection between district use of referendum levies and school and state funding of schools. It's pretty much a straight trend upwards. So through good times and bad, I think it's hard to say there's a clear connection between the level of state funding and referendum use by districts. Our other thought, if the intent was to try to simplify education funding and improve transparency, the $100 million or so that's being used to buy down the consolidated levy, if you use that same amount of money, you could outright eliminate two out of the three levies that are being consolidated, the equity and the transition levies, together total about $100 million. So if the idea was to simplify, we could just outright eliminate two levies, but we'd still have one left, rather than consolidating and creating a new one and buying that down. So those have been our concerns, and again, we very much appreciate the time and patience Senator Stumpf and his staff have had in trying to work through this issue with us. But again, we have opposed the consolidated levy and the recreation of the general ed levy, primarily for those reasons.
Sir Ortman.
Just asking a question. You said that the $100 million might better be used to buy down two other levies. Which two are they?
Maybe I can answer that. Mr. Chairman, we actually eliminate three levies in the bill, the operating capital levy, the equity levy, and the transition levy. And then we have a new levy, and that new levy is called a consolidated levy, and that we buy down by $100 million. And so it's actually we will no longer have a transition levy, an operating capital levy, or an equity levy.
Mr. Chair, could Mr. Bartholomew also answer that question? Are there two additional levies that you might be able to, or two different ones?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ortman, Senator Stumpf is correct. The consolidated levy is taking operating capital levy, transition levy, and the equity levy. It takes those three and consolidates them into one new one. And as Mr. Nauman mentioned, that would be about $219 million together in fiscal 09. And then the bill uses $100 million to buy that 219 down to the roughly 119 you see in the spreadsheets. And we would argue taking that $100 million, you could outright, of the three that are being consolidated, you could just buy out two of them and still have one remaining. So in the end, you could have one remaining either by buying out two and just it's the operating capital that would remain, or you could consolidate all three and create a new one and have one remaining. So you kind of have a choice of one remaining. Do you want to recreate a general ed levy or buy out two out of the three and just have the operating capital remaining as it currently exists?
Mr.
Mr. Chair.
Bartholomew, thank you. Senator Limerick?
There, that wasn't so bad.
That's because we stayed to the bill.
That's right. That's all we wanted.
Mr. Chairman, in the proposal that you have before you, two big things I think we tried to address. One was to pay for the special education costs that we have in our formula and our statutes. That will free up a lot of dollars across the state in all of our school districts to actually put back into their programs and to their reducing class sizes, adding some new programs. And it's a debt that I think it's finally time for us to live up to and pay off. The other one is property tax relief, and I think all through the last several years, that's what we've heard is property taxes are growing, and certainly the school districts are running referendum after referendum, and that has been last fall, I think only 37% of the referendums actually passed. So we wish we had more money. We wish we had a larger target and could actually put some inflation adjustment on the formula. I'm not sure what's going to happen in terms of the revenues, but we also wish we could plug some money into special or early childhood, where some of those preventative programs could really be added. But we do appreciate your support in helping us put together a bill that reduces property taxes by over roughly $110 million, and pays a bill that's long overdue. Special ed.
Mr. Chair?
Anything else, Senator Thunder?
Mr. Chair and Senator Stump, in my own Rochester district, there's a lot of special education because of Mayo, and it's somewhat of a magnet as kids come in, and Rochester, I believe, is perhaps maybe a little above the average in terms of special education kids. But so my question is, in a district like ours, which is going to perhaps benefit from this special education, I don't want to say shift, but movement, do we come out better than perhaps a school district in more rural Minnesota that really may not have a lot of special education? In other words, would that kind of a district be suffering from this more money into special education, and they not have the kids, and so.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Senjum, special education is a cost-driven program, so it actually they get reimbursed for the costs that are expent, which is a little different than putting money on the formula where it's basically spread across the state. So certain districts have higher special education costs. Those tend to be school districts that have developed fairly extensive and special ed programs. They tend to be some of the regional centers where a lot of these students come, and the school district happens to be a little bit larger. But the special ed costs hit most every district. Visiting with a small school district just a couple weeks ago, where one student has driven the special ed costs so high that they actually had to lay off some teachers to fund the extra special ed costs in that district. And so I think the problem has been that we've kind of relegated special ed as kind of a second-tier interest. And we've, over time, when I was visiting with the governor, I'll maybe share this little tidbit. When I was visiting with the governor a few weeks ago, there was a lot of discussion about what we were going to do. And one of the things that I tried to explain to him when I first came to the legislature, at that time Senator Jerry Sikorski was here, and he was chairing the Health and Human Services Committee, and they closed the Hastings State Hospital. We had our hospitals across the state were full of students, full of young people who had disabilities. Today, we have no state hospitals that are open. They're all closed. Where did those students go, or where did students like that go now? They're in our communities. They're in our schools, and that's good. Many of them are with our families. Many of them are in our special programs in our communities. Back then, the state paid the bill to the hospitals. Today, we have kind of pushed it in the background and said, federal government, give us more money because you said it was going to be 40%. You're only giving us 14. Right now, the federal government's backing off even more. And so it's finally time, I think, that the state of Minnesota steps up to the plate. Instead of pushing it back onto property taxes, we pay the bill. And I think we're raising that awareness in this bill that special ed is really a very important part of the overall education package that we put together. And I hope, like I say, that we can come up with the resources to put money on the formula for districts and address that inflation cost as well.
Else members? Anybody else want to testify on the bill? Chair Langseth, move the bill.
I move the bill.
Chair Langseth moves Senate File 2095, the first engrossment, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Contrary, no.
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you,
Senator Stump.
Mr. Chairman, members, go balance.
Summary of the public hearing.
Oh God.
Kind of run through what you might want to
Let me know kind of what you're talking about. We're adjourned until Monday morning, 8:30.